This is Len Bertain, one of the authors of 567 Problem Solving. This is Chapter 3, How to Solve Difficult Problems. Don't. Most successful problem solvers, including both authors, never believe that they've ever solved a difficult problem. Instead, they tackle aspects of the difficult problem they best understand. Learn, make progress, and iterate. During each little phase of progress, the problem solver becomes smarter about the issue and gains insight into new ways to make progress. The admonition, "Don't solve difficult problems," sounds like trite and glib advice. Yet we cannot overemphasize the importance of this point. Attempting to swallow whole a difficult problem, or even worse, a wicked problem, leads to wasteful spending, unpleasant, unintended consequences, and often having to deal with a problem that is worse than when you started. In this chapter, we endeavor to make our case that attacking a difficult problem or wicked problem in its entirety is always a bad strategy. The world is full of complex and difficult problems. We encounter them in our personal lives, at work, in industry, and in government. These are the problems that have often lingered for years, had been ignored by prior leaders or managers, or have been made worse by prior attempts to solve them. Some difficult problems are so complex we call them wicked problems. We cover wicked problems in Chapter 11. As indicated in the introduction, we categorize all problems into three buckets: stupid, difficult, and wicked. Here are some examples of well-known difficult problems. Sending the man to a moon was a difficult problem. Notice we categorize this as difficult, not wicked. The reason for this is that there is a clear path to the final success, albeit with numerous challenges along the way, such as weight, lift system optimization, re-entry heat dissipation, and life support systems. But all of these had to fit into the overall guidance system computations, which were not at all easy to perform in 1968 and 69. There was indeed a lot of work to be done, but the individual steps were clear, and there were no major side effects or unintended consequences associated with the success or failure of the intermediate project results. This lack of major side effects and unintended consequences is why putting a man on the moon was a difficult problem, admittedly of grand proportions. In the end, reaching the moon and returning was like solving a real tough physics and engineering problem, nothing more. Another problem, unraveling the mystery of the DNA structure and its actual double helix structure, was also a difficult problem. At the time of this discovery, there were competing teams trying to figure out the final true structure of DNA. Linus Pauling in the United States at Caltech, who initially proposed single-strand DNA structure. Maurice Wilkins at Cambridge, King's College, who was trying to unravel the DNA structure purely from X-ray diffraction patterns. Rosalind Franklin at Cambridge, King's College, who had a very similar approach to Wilkins, and the team which was first succeeded in publishing the right answer, Watson and Crick at Cambridge, who first tried to explain the DNA structure with a triple strand, but then settled on a double helix. The approach these teams took to solving a difficult problem is an excellent case study and proper technique. Each small increment of information about the structure of DNA allowed each of the teams to move their research forward. They all learned and gained insights from information about incremental progress made by themselves and others where available. Now, since this was a competitive research objective, the information sharing was less than perfect, which is perhaps the only aspect of difficult problem solving where these teams collectively fell short of ideal. As history shows, Watson and Crick first proposed the double helix structure of DNA which perfectly fit the available data and precisely explained cell division and X-ray diffraction observations. A third example. Most problems are not simple, or as we call them, stupid problems. Economics, education, budgeting, long-standing business problems that have been ignored for an extended period of time, research problems. All of these are examples of difficult problems, some of them even wicked problems. Our approach to solving wicked problems and difficult problems is to break them down into smaller, simpler problems. Most difficult problems can be readily decomposed, as we call it, when examined from the right perspective. That is what we call the 567 thinking perspective, where straightforward and ready progress can be made. Obtaining the right perspective on a difficult problem is achieved through repeated measurements and consideration. Once a clear and concise definition of a successful outcome is understood by everyone involved. A fourth example. We have been frequently asked, how do you solve so many difficult problems in your careers? And in fact, viewed from afar, we have both solved extremely difficult technology, engineering, and business problems. Examples of difficult problems that we have ultimately solved include developing the algorithm to increase the OPRA, that's Option Price Reporting Authority, tick distribution speed by 100 times, dramatically increasing the productivity of dozens of factories and businesses, and developing very sophisticated national intelligence data collection systems still in use today. At the outset, these problems appeared intractable and had been tackled unsuccessfully by multiple teams prior to our involvement. From our perspective, the past failures were due to improper problem definition, inadequate measurements to gain insights into the problem, and a penchant for seeking the 95-33 solve-it-all-at-once problem-solving approach. We'll go into that later. As stated before, this is the sixth example, we claim to have never solved a difficult problem in our lives. Some readers may argue that we are engaging in semantic artifice, as we clearly have solved difficult problems and continue to do so repeatedly. However, we feel so strongly about our highly successful approach to solving problems that we insist our long history of solving difficult problems is nothing but a record of solving lots and lots of little problems we have decomposed from the big, bad, difficult problems. And finally, it bears repeating. If you want to be a successful problem solver, you must break up difficult problems into pieces and work on the pieces you understand best. This takes a combination of practice and patience. Patience in the process and trust in yourself. You have to have the patience to make incremental progress against a difficult problem, and the trust that you and your team members will learn from each step forward and gain insights into the remainder of the problem. Attempting to solve a difficult problem all at once usually results in failure, as poor assumptions and insufficient expertise are applied to designing fundamentally flawed solutions. And we put an accentuate a point here. If you want to be a successful problem solver, you must break up difficult problems into pieces and work on the pieces that you understand best. Ask yourself, how many times have you assembled a team to solve a problem, and every team member knew everything there was to know about the problem? Never, right? That's a prototypical difficult problem-solving experience. Despite everyone's best efforts and attention, excellent alternatives to effectively and efficiently solve a problem are overlooked during the course of a project. We feel this is not a fault of the project team, but rather the fault of the objectives set at the outset of the project. When success is defined as get it done, get it all done, or words to that effect, Project teams naturally focus on whichever techniques and knowledge they have at the outset of a project, set a course, and execute it to the best of their abilities. This often results in a team that is overextended, frustrated, unable to achieve the goals that management has set out for them. The preferred alternative to overextending a team and frustrating them by requiring they solve the entirety of the difficult problem is to allow them to make progress where they are both comfortable and certain of making progress. Teams are inspired by this kind of management flexibility and awareness, as everyone likes to be part of a team that achieves, a team that succeeds. As they get smarter, the team members will bring new ideas, innovative approaches to their managers as how to improve subsequent phases of this difficult problem. Once your team members learn to solve problems through incremental innovation, they can apply that skill to solving other complex problems. When teams and employees are taught to solve problems in this way, every worker in every role will be able to think of complex problems as tractable, as long as a realistic, incremental problem-solving approach is used. This applies most of all to highly educated employees who have been taught to solve problems by delivering a single, monolithic, 100% solution. This is a natural derivative of the academic experience carried over to the business or government world. Most educational systems teach case studies in solving projects that are bite-sized and tractable. While this focus on simple solution is incredibly useful at making progress on projects, the mindset of seeking the 100% solution in all cases turns out to be harmful whenever a difficult or wicked problem is encountered. In most cases, 567 problem solving and the thinking that goes along with it is an eye-opener for many people with extensive formal educations. They have learned a variety of techniques and methods for analysis, had little or no practical problem-solving experience before starting work, and have long been accustomed to seeking 100% solutions from the beginning. The very existence of Gantt charts, planning out all the steps of a project from day one, are testament to this kind of thinking. A fundamental reason why incremental progress and iterative problem solving is so much more effective than a big bang project approach is due to learning. Simply put, old ideas and methods often won't solve new problems. As project team members learn, they develop new ideas and methods which allow more aspects of the problem to be addressed. We like to use the following cartoon to make a point, and it's a man walking up steps, and the step in front of him is over his head, and the question is, how do we take the next step? And the cartoon really makes a good point of that. We want to figure out how to make the big leap, tackling the solution in one big leap. The reality is, big leaps are really just a series of improvements and insight that result in new ideas and methods. That's the end of Chapter 3. Thank you for listening. See you in Chapter 4. Thank you.